Speaking of Reliability, a podcast with good friends talking with you about reliability engineering topics. Let's discuss how to create and improve your reliability program and your career. Hi, welcome to Speaking of Reliability. This is Fred Shankleberg, and this is Take Two with James Kovacevic. Hey, James.
Hey, Fred. How you doing?
We had one of those failure. The recorder system we had, we were in, about 10 minutes, 5 minutes or something into a discussion, and I noticed our recorder wasn't working. So we're starting again. So thanks for bearing with me, James, to make that work. But, you know, it's something we deal with, right? We know failures happen. We're in that business.
Yeah, but you know what? Kind of kicking myself because normally we're a little bit smarter and we do a redundant recording.
Yeah.
And this time the redundant system wasn't turned on. It was in manual and I didn't hit the record button on my end. So that's why we had to start again from scratch.
Yeah. You know, it happens. So thanks for turning on the second recording this time. But, you know, it's one of those things, James, that we get complacent. The equipment seems to be running just fine. You know, we've done dozens of podcasts and we're just one of us is doing the recording. I know when we first started, we were nervous about that. So we deliberately did the second recording. But I certainly got out of the habit. And it's one of those things is that we were getting data, you know, anecdotally that, hey, it's just working. It's always got the recording. We're good to go. And this is a very, very simple system compared to the stuff we typically work with. But what I wanted to talk to you about, and we were just about to dive into it with our first attempt, was an article you wrote a couple of weeks ago it's going to be a couple of months ago when this episode comes out, and we'll link to it. But it was along the concept that we, in our factories and in our systems, we have data. We have tons of data, and we're not really using it. And now there's this whole... over the last year or so, and more so even more recently, is more and more companies are saying we need to do the Internet of Things. We need to completely sensor and wire up and monitor all these different parameters and have big data analysts looking at it, using artificial intelligence to help us guide our systems, do all these wonderful things. It's just that I think one of the points you made in your article was, you know, if you can't deal with small data, what's the point of going to big data? I don't think that was the way you phrased it, but I think it's the idea.
Yeah, it's being pragmatic about things. So, yeah, the Internet of Things is a big rage right now. The power behind it, the vision that it can be, is huge. But for those organizations that can't plan and schedule work now, it doesn't matter what the big data tells them, they're not going to be able to execute on that advice or warning anyways. For example, if you know you have your 18 sensors wired up to this motor pump combination, you're getting all this information and you know this big data does the crunching, and it comes out saying, hey, you're gonna have a pump failure in 4 days, here's what the failure mode is, da da da, but your planners don't look at the notification for 4 days. Well, what good is it? Let alone the time it takes to plan, schedule, execute that work. You might not be able to act on that for 15 days after the notification comes out, not to mention any spare parts issues you have. You know, your system says you have 3 impellers, but in reality, you have none. If you don't have those basic things in place, it doesn't matter how good that big data gets and the insights it provides you. If you don't have the basics down, I don't think it's going to help you all that much.
Well, it goes into... You know, you can do vibration analysis all day long, but if you don't actually align the shafts, I think you had one of the guests on that was talking about vibration. It's basically you got to get the basics right. You know, you know your equipment's going to heat up and it's not going to be uniform across it, and you got to take that into account. It's fundamental. And here's the ways you consider it and think about it. But it starts with insulation. It starts with the design of your equipment. But if we collect tons of data and we can't do anything with it, And what I see more often, though, instead of not looking at it for 4 days, James, is we just don't look at it. The IT guys are happy just buying more memory and more servers to store stuff. They don't know that you're not using it necessarily. So, but they're happy just gathering it.
Yep. You know? Absolutely.
It's phenomenal how much data is available, and how fast we can get to stuff. I have a problem with is that you need to be collecting the right stuff from a reliability point of view. And vendors are going to sell you what they can measure, not what you need to measure.
Yeah, and that's why I say you got to be pragmatic about it. So since you can collect temperature, you know, vibrations, ultrasonic measurements, say you can collect all these different measurements on one piece of equipment. Does it make sense? Do those measurements relate to the failure modes you experience on that piece of equipment? If they don't, why would you bother recording it?
That's right.
So it all goes back to having that fundamental understanding. If this is the failure mode, what's the cause of it? What's the failure mechanism? Can we start to measure that and detect all that stuff? Mm-hmm. If we don't have an understanding of how all those work together and what those underlying symptoms are and how they evolve into that potential failure, then there's no point in collecting data for the sake of collecting data. We got to know why we're collecting what and what we're going to do with it. Mm-hmm. And when organizations can't collect and analyze hours spent on preventative maintenance over the course of a week, why are they worried about collecting all this process data that they're never going to act on?
That's right. I'm picking up a little bit of frustration there, James, because you've been in one too many factories that just doesn't get this. I take it.
maybe as a consultant, I don't always get to go to the factories that get this stuff right. So all I see is the organizations who don't have the fundamentals down.
Yeah. Maybe it's just
the nature of the business we're in. Nobody calls us consultants to go brag on the latest and best system that they have that's world-class performing. They only call us when stuff's on fire and breaking.
Yeah, I think you're onto something there. But, you know, it's one of those things, back when I was a manufacturing engineer, it was a regular routine for us. Our boss, our manufacturing manager, engineering manager, he required us, there was five of us engineers supporting the plant, we had to do an experiment every day. Now, sometimes we did pretty silly experiments just to get data and run some numbers for him to satisfy that requirement. But other times we were, can I get a correlation here? What's the critical parameter on this equipment that gives me the best performance or best throughput? From a maintenance point of view, how fast, you know, what? How do I know this motor is going bad, or how this bearing doesn't sound right? Can I use an acoustic device to sense that bearing failure before my ear can hear it? Can I use another device to get an earlier sense of that so that I have time to repair it before it's imminent and causes a down situation for our plant? And so we were doing experiments like that all the time. And it was only through those manual experimentation and trying stuff, bringing equipment in and measuring it. And then once we proved out the concept, then some of those got elevated to a project that then said, well, let's work it out. Let's sort out all the details of that. And some of those got implemented into the plant, where they became trusted advisors, basically, to guide our operators and our equipment and maintenance teams is to take run and maintain our equipment. But it started with sometimes months and months of research to really know what we're doing before we went and did something, a change like that on the line. But I see way too many pieces of equipment that show up with 47 sensors on it, and they just stream data off to a server someplace. And if you don't look at it, if you're not running experiments, if you're not analyzing it, you're not looking for those correlations. I agree with you. Then what's the point?
Yeah, and that's the difficult piece, right? It's all got to be, you have to have the fundamental understanding. We just had a conversation around the importance of, you know, reliability modeling software, statistical analysis packages, stuff like that. And at the conclusion of the conversation, we came to one important piece, and that piece was you have to understand the model you're looking at, the analysis you're doing, before you can use the software effectively to be good at it. Mm-hmm. And I think it's the same sort of thing. We can collect all the data we want, but if you can't correlate those process parameters, those 15 different process parameters you're tracking to a cause or failure mechanism or something of that nature, then what good is tracking it? Now, for those organizations that are good at what they do, they understand those correlations. They understand how different variables influence their equipment and how those lead to failures. IoT is going to be a huge, huge advantage for them in the short term at a minimum, because they have that fundamental understanding. They invested the time, the energy, the resources to establish those fundamentals and make sure that the data that they're getting already, they're acting on. Now they can get better data and react and get it earlier so they can react better. They will have that huge advantage. But the organizations that haven't looked at data analysis yet, IoT is not going to help them at this point. They need to get the basics down first.
Yeah. I mean, and you mentioned spare rooms or MRO and just work order processing and planning. All of those things are foundational. And I totally agree. One of the things that the groups I like, I hope to get called from one of the groups that's got a good program already, because implementing artificial intelligence on a system when they already understand and know how to analyze data, know what they're looking for, when they start getting into like the IBM Watson system to take a look at their data and let it look for the patterns and let it look for the correlations and so on, rather than building them yourself, they can judge it. They can tell whether that's reasonable or not. They have the training, basically, the skill to know, is this make sense? Is this a gut feel? Does it pass the sniff test, as one of my bosses used to say? But if you don't have the basics down from an analysis point of view, if you're not already running experiments, if you're not analyzing data and looking at the correlations, Watson could tell you to turn left and for no apparent reason, and you wouldn't know whether that's good or not.
Exactly. And that's why you have to have those fundamentals down. Now, once you have those, I think the IoT is going to be an incredibly powerful tool. The one thing I've been reading a lot on, although it's hard to find information on, it's still not readily available and widespread, is prescriptive maintenance. Mm-hmm. And that's using all this data from process parameters, condition monitoring sensors, all these things to prescribe when you should be doing maintenance, when you should be lubricating things, when you should be inspecting things, doing those sort. That is hugely, hugely powerful. Mm-hmm. And that is very, very intriguing to me, because for organizations that get what they're doing, have those fundamentals, this is a huge step change in the way maintenance is performed. No longer is it go do this lube route every month. You can get advanced right now with ultrasonic lubrication. So you measure changes in bearings and so on and so forth to establish the right amount of lubrication at the right intervals. But this is prescriptive maintenance would be taking that one step further. Mm-hmm. It would know when you need to go out, how much you should be giving, all those various things. And that's real time. So you're not doing a route prematurely or too late. It's the right amount at the right time. It's being very prescriptive in what you're doing. That is very, very intriguing. It's something I am trying to learn more about and dive deeper into, because that to me is a fundamental shift in way maintenance is done. And that's what IoT can bring. Mm-hmm.
So I'd recommend, James, that you take a look at the physics of failure in the design world, where there's pretty detailed models on the fundamentals of what variables, what stresses and use conditions and stuff lead to failure. And there's pretty extensive models on a range of different, very fundamental components, mostly in electronics, but there's a lot of metals also. And there's more and more being developed in things like bearings, for example. I don't know if it's moved up into motors and so on, but it's one of those things that process of understanding the fundamental reasons things fail and modeling that and understanding very detailed characterizations of that stuff is a step that I think is going to make that prescriptive maintenance work. You know, right now we can do preventative maintenance based on, say, ultrasonic readings. We know we're getting more and more vibration, so we need to do alignment or we need to change the bearings or whatever. It's given us indication that something's awry, where you can add another level of sensitivity to that and know exactly what you need to measure. It's a combination of throughput of product, what kind of temperatures you're seeing. Those all can change the rate of wear of, say, on a lubricant and the degradation of a lubricant. And so the modeling system of the, and it's a deep dive into understanding the failures. And so if I really understand how my lubricant breaks down, I'll know exactly what to measure so that I can, say, do the prescriptive maintenance. But in my world, we call it physics of failure. And so you might want to search in that realm.
Yeah, I'll have to definitely look at it, because when I Google prescriptive maintenance, Watson comes up from IBM.
Yeah, yeah. And I think they're moving into that area, aren't they? It's not just the human body anymore. It's
no, they got Watson looking at asset management and asset performance. So they're there, and I found one aircraft MRO company that's doing a lot of work in it. Mm-hmm. And that, but aside from that, I'm not seeing anything else from a prescriptive maintenance standpoint. And it fascinated me, because that is a huge fundamental shift that we can see in the way maintenance is performed. But once again, you have to have that understanding of the failure modes, the influences to it. You have to have an understanding of that. Mm-hmm. Maybe not the end user, because that's, let's face it, everyone's buying this access to this software, this technology, so they don't have to have that end user understanding of these things. They're trying to grow and scale and so on and so forth. Mm-hmm. So I get that. But still, like you said, if the analysis tool is saying do this, you want to have someone to have a, does that feel right? Yes or no? Based on experience, knowledge, expertise. Yep. So while that prescriptive maintenance piece is very, very exciting to me, I'm also very, very hesitant, because, you know, preventative maintenance has been around since what, the 40s?
Yep.
The concept of it. And we have organizations that can't get that right.
Well, we shouldn't be complaining too much, James. It keeps us in business. These companies are feeling the hurt, and so they call us to go fix stuff like that. But it's frustrating. It's the same problem over and over again. And it's like, come on, this is, you guys got to know this.
And it's, I don't have a problem as a consultant going into an organization, helping them to resolve those sorts of issues, moving, getting basic preventative maintenance in place, getting mm-hmm. condition monitoring in place. I don't have a problem with that. My gripe, if you will be when you help an organization with that problem, you go away for 8 months or a year, they call you to come back because everything that we put in place is no longer in place, and they're back in the same position they were when you went there a year before. That's what drives me nuts.
Yeah. That's frustrating. I agree. Now, here's a different twist to it, though, is this was a long way. I was in the Army, and I was in a class, and one of our projects was to help the headquarters office install computers. And it was the first computers that they were installing there. And so I got to work with some general's admin secretary. And she was been working on a typewriter for 30 years. And she had an electric typewriter, which she loved. She thought it was a great benefit from the old manual typewriter she'd used for 30 years. And I came in and said, well, we're going to put a computer on your desk. And I went through and says, you know, you don't have to retype something. Editing is real fast. I showed her some demos and all this stuff. And she sat there and crossed her arms and said, I don't need to learn that. I'm faster than any computer. You know, I don't need all that hocus pocus stuff. And it took a little while. I think I worked with her over the summer because she was pivotal for my project to be successful, as I had to help her adopt it. And it wasn't about the typing or the new keyboard or the technology, or she could learn it. She even admitted she could. It was just different. It was, so this Internet of Thing is a new, there's a lot of advertising on it. There's a lot of push on it. There's another way for people to sell something. They're pushing the benefit that you can do prescriptive maintenance type stuff. You can do all of these new artificial intelligence guiding your decisions, all these great, wonderful things. But there's still this huge barrier, this resistance to change. And I think some of the companies we run into that are not doing RCM, for example, or predictive maintenance, is not that they can't, is that they don't want to. It's just change. And, you know, we see this wave after wave of things come out, but there's always resistance. So I don't know if Internet of Things is going to get the fad chasers that are going to, some VPs can say, implement it, and then it falls apart because their staff is just not willing to learn it, to implement it.
Yeah. But it's not only that, it's, you know, you can say implement it, but we go back to the physics of failures. Mm-hmm. You need to understand what influence is there. You should be measuring so on and so forth to make a difference.
You know, some of some of the techs I've worked with on different pieces of equipment, they're like the old auto mechanic. They could just hear you drive up and tell you, you need a timing belt change or your water pump's going, or, I mean, they could hear, they could sense, they could feel the issues that are going around with your equipment. And you've run into people like that. They know their equipment. They have the work experience and they know their equipment. They put their hand on a motor and they go, yep, that's going to go someday. You know, here soon, we need to plan for that. It's now that's being automated. That's being moved away. So I think some of it is the change is taking away some of the need for what these skilled technicians offer.
See, even if artificial intelligence is able to help predict these failures, you still need that skilled individual to go fix things. Mm-hmm. I've been in organizations where they hire the cheapest trade person they can find. And all they are is they're not tradespeople, they're parts changers. Mm-hmm. This isn't working, I'm going to change this part. Oh, mm-hmm. That didn't work, I'll change this part. And that's all they do. They don't have a fundamental understanding of the equipment, how it works. So they become parts changers, not techs mm-hmm. or mm-hmm. craftsmen. So I don't think that will ever take all of that away. Even with all that data, and like we talked about that reliability software earlier, is you need to have someone that says, yes, that makes sense. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Artificial intelligence, IoT, can say this is going right, but you look at it and you're like, no, it's going left. And you know from a fact based on experience, your own analysis, that it is going the opposite direction. We need to have that stopgap in place. But that only comes by doing the due diligence, having the fundamentals in place, understanding failure modes, causes, correlations, stuff of that nature.
Yeah. You know, it's probably a subject I should make a note for a future session and we've talked about it before, I'm sure, it's the culture around the organization. It doesn't matter what set of tools we're trying to bring into an organization or they want to bring into it. It's the culture's got to be there to support it. And the maintenance is no different than any other part of the organization. There's ways we do stuff, and it's large part driven by the expectations that the organization and the team itself has about how it does stuff. If it's a learning organization, they'll embrace this stuff and they'll continue to grow and learn. If they, you know, just that's not important, that's not how we're rewarded, then they're not going to bother. It's you know, there'll be exceptions, I'm sure, but it's tough. But yeah, we'll have to come back and talk about just the culture impact on all these things.
Yeah, but you know, when I think of it, IoT is incredibly powerful. I'm very excited for some aspects of it. I'm also terrified of some aspects of it. So it's one of those things, you know, I'm eager to learn more. I'm eager to see it in use and do all these wonderful things with it, but I'm very cautious because I think it has potential to bury some organizations because they're not ready for the level of data, the level of rigor that's probably needed to make it successful.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah. If you thought putting in the CMMS system was tough, wait till you try to automate your maintenance predictive capabilities. Yeah.
Yeah, it's good luck.
Yeah, good luck. Call James. He'll help you out. Yeah, help you make that happen. Well, James, I appreciate it so much. I know we had a little trouble there with a false start, but I think we got the energy back into the second issue, I think, a little better. So I'm glad it worked this way because we got a good recording this time. So I think we're in good shape. Now, yep, for
absolutely.
So for the audience, you know, where are you at? Are you looking at this Internet of Things and wondering what's going on, or are you embracing it? What kind of challenges or issues are you facing as if you're trying to implement this or explore it some more? Do you agree with this? You know, is it a big potential or not, or all that good stuff? Yeah, James.
Yeah, it's, you know, to me, it's just, I'm trying to learn more and more about it. The funny thing is I see new companies pop up every day around it. But do they have that fundamental understanding? So that's the one thing that I find curious is all of a sudden all these companies are popping up with predictive maintenance this, prescriptive maintenance that. Mm-hmm. But they're brand new. They've never been in the reliability game, but they're just going off data analytics. So I'm very curious to see how that pans out. I think it's interesting. I think, like I said, you got to have a fundamental understanding of failure modes, causes, all those things before you can make this happen. Personally, I'm trying to learn more and more about it. I'm trying to find as much as I can around prescriptive maintenance, because I think that's a huge opportunity moving forward for organizations that are ready for it.
Yep, definitely. So, you know, for the audience, if you're in this realm, if you found some good resources for that, you know, drop us a note, send James a link or give him a call. I'm sure he'd love to pick your brain and learn more about that. And I'm sure, James, you and I are going to talk about this some more, especially the prescriptive maintenance one. We should explore that some more. But it sounds like from our discussions over the last couple of times we've talked is that there's still plenty of room to learn the basics and to get the fundamentals right. So we'll add that to the list also. So let me ask the audience, you know, what would best serve you? You want more of the fundamentals, the building blocks of any good system, or would you like us to dive in and spend some more time exploring and the nuances of these, the more, I won't say cutting edge, but leading edge technologies that you may be aspiring to. So let us know. Head over to reliability.fm. And you'll find the Speaking of Reliability show and plenty of comment fields in our emails and things like that. And we'd love to hear from you. So with that, James, I think we'll wrap this one up for tonight. And I'll let you enjoy the long lingering sunset over the next couple of hours where you are up in the Great North.
All right. Thank you very much. I will be closing the Black Hope line shortly.
Well, I appreciate you staying up with me. Thanks, James. We'll talk to you later.
Thanks, Fred.
Thanks for listening to Speaking of Reliability. We invite you to join the conversation. If you have a question or a topic that you think we should discuss in a future show, please let us know. You can find a comment box below the episode show notes, or just leave a note as part of a review on iTunes.